You were listening to episode 525 of the Latina Mom Legacy podcast. How does a behavioral specialist begin to focus on Latino and bilingual families? What advice does she have for parents with special needs children? In this episode, Viana Calderon, a Latina mom, bilingual behavioral specialist, and founder behind Bebes of the Island, which offers bilingual mommy and me classes, helps answer those questions. Join us as we dive deeper into the conversation of behavioral assessments, autism and Down syndrome, and how language may or may not affect these. Plus, she shares her unique Peruvian dish to pass down, and you'll learn where you can sign up for her bilingual Mommy and Me classes. Yo, a bilingual parenting educator, author, multilingual parenting mom, Jenny Perez, te invito as we take a closer look. Así que no te lo pierdas. Hola, hola, ¿cómo estás? I hope that you're doing well. I hope that life is treating you kind. Welcome to another episode of the Latina Mom Legacy Podcast. I am your host, Jenny Perez. This week in Jersey, I hope that you're having a great week. Here at the Latina Mom Legacy Podcast, I'd love to empower you to raise bilingual children, que hablen español, que estén conectados a sus raíces, and of course, to empower you as a parent. So welcome if this is your first time listening. Bienvenida, bienvenido. Thank you so much for tuning in whatever corner of the world you are tuning in from. Así que mil, mil gracias. Real quick, if you want to connect with me, you can do so on the gram at Mi Legacy, spelled M-I-L-E-G-A-S-I. You can also connect with me through your inbox, and you can do that at milegacy.com when you subscribe to our newsletter. And the newsletter is evolving, and I'm reaching thousands of parents who want to raise bilingual children all over the world. And I try to empower you through the newsletter and give you bilingual printables, sometimes book recommendations, what's going on in bilingual parenting or bilingualism news, and what's going on at Mi Legacy in our blogs and events and our courses or workshops. Así que if you want to stay in the know, be sure to join our newsletter. A ver, ¿qué les cuento? ¿Qué les cuento? So a couple of things. So Victoria just finished another end of season hockey tournament, and her team did very well, and they took home the gold. So good for them. Good for her. And of course, it doesn't end there. She's signing up for a spring league. And I got to say, I got really annoyed with the organization. And it's not her usual organization. It's a different organization. But I had reached out to them because her birthday is coming up very soon on the 27th. And you know how it is when you plan birthday parties or a birthday get together or something, like, you know, with their amiguitas or their amiguitos. People need time. I know that like the average is like 4 weeks, at least, I mean, out here. I don't know about you, but you want to give people time to prepare to, you know, put it in their calendar, right? And I got just so annoyed because they haven't released the schedule. And at this point, we're not going to be able to do anything with her friends, with her amiguitos, because it's too last minute. Like, anywhere that we wanted to make a reservation required at least a couple weeks notice. And here we are less than 2 weeks. And I was just like kind of bummed out. But, you know, Victoria is very understanding. And I think that she's turning 9. Oh, my goodness, guys, she's turning 9. When we started this, I think she was like 3 or 4. It's become unreal. You know, she gets it. So we decided that we're going to do a very special birthday for her, just a family birthday. So we told her that she could take the day off from school. So shh. And we're going to spend her actual birthday in the city, in New York, in New York City. And we're going to play tourists all day. And we're going to start early and do a bunch of things that we have never done, or maybe I've done once in my life. It's just funny. I feel like when you live in New York City, and we lived there many years, both my husband and I, and even with Victoria until she was 4, you kind of like don't do the touristy things. Like to this day, I've never been to the Statue of Liberty. I mean, I've been around it, like on the cruises, or the wine cruises that they do, and not cruises, but they're like, I guess it is a cruise. I don't know. Where you're on a boat, you're like sipping wine and cheese. Like, yeah, they go around the Statue of Liberty. But to say that I've been to the actual Lady Liberty, like inside, no, or to the island, no. So we decided that we're going to do some of the things that we haven't done. We're not going to do Lady Liberty, but we're going to do a couple of very iconic things that you want to do when you're a New Yorker, when you're a tourist in New York. So that's going to be fun. And definitely on my list is the Brooklyn Bridge, walking the Brooklyn Bridge. So we'll see. As long as el tiempo está bueno, maybe we'll do that. But yeah, I mean, sometimes you have to find alternatives for the kids. And she's super excited. And so are we. I'm just like kind of annoyed with this organization because my goodness, it's like here we are. I don't even know when she's going to have games, when she's not going to have games. And, you know, as a parent, it's like it just makes things hard to plan and first world problems, right? I also got to tell you that I am going to Colombia. Ooh, yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not taking Victoria on this trip because I'm taking my mom on this trip. She wants to see her sisters. I feel like this may be the last time that she goes. I mean, we'll see. She's just like, I think when people get old, like they don't want to travel anymore. My mom is getting to that point. Like she already told me like she's not coming. And just for context, she lives in Miami. But she already told me like she's done traveling here. Like she's not going to come back to our house. She just doesn't want to travel. And she said to me, you know, mija, I want to go to Colombia and I want to see mis hermanas. And last year I had two aunts pass away. They're getting up there. And I feel like this is a good opportunity to get la familia together and, you know, spend some time. We're not going to spend a long time. I think we're going to spend like a week there. But just enough for her to, you know, see her familia, for us to visit my dad at the cemetery. And yeah, we'll see. I'm sad because I really wanted to take Victoria, but it's not going to be during the summer. We're going to be going in May because la tarifa baja. And if you don't know what that is, it's like there's certain like travel seasons, like this is low season. And I mean, you can get like a ticket to Colombia for like $300, maybe under $400, versus like high season, it's like $700-$800. So it's a huge, huge difference. So we'll see how that goes, but I'll keep you posted. Last week, I talked about how your child may be missing out on being bilingual and the science behind it. So if you haven't checked it up, you haven't listened to that, please check it out. This week, I'm talking to Bianna Calderon. She's a Latina mom. She's a bilingual behavioral specialist. And we're talking about the different things that bilingual families need when it comes to special children or children with special needs. Así que great information, great tips. Así que espero que te guste. I'll talk to you soon. Ciao, ciao. I am excited to have Bianna Calderon on today's show. Bianna, welcome to the show. ¿Cómo estás?
Yo estoy muy bien. I am also excited. I love that we're speaking both a little bit of English and Spanish. Now, gotta empower that bilingualism.
Yes, yes. Bianna, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes, of course. I am a behavior consultant, behavior specialist. I am also work for early intervention as a service coordinator. But overall, I was born in Peru and I was raised here at the age of 5. So I grew up in that multicultural home.
So tell us a little bit about your family. So you have a baby. How many kids do you have? Just a baby?
Yes. So I just had my son on 2023. So he just turned 1, actually.
Aww.
So basically, yes, my family, we're all Peruvian. So I have my mom, my dad, my siblings. And then as I created my own family, my husband is actually Chinese. So I actually get to raise my son, not only in a bilingual home, but a very multicultural home.
Tell us a little bit about the dynamic now that your son is a baby, or while your son is a baby, how you're trying to raise him bilingually or potentially trilingually.
So as a provider myself, I get to not only educate him based on my own methods of what I've learned in school and how to do any type of treatments, but also I'm learning as I see how he develops or what he accepts. So for example, I always tell my in-laws and my own family, my own parents specifically, speak your native language. Like as a mother, or even myself, for example, I would switch English and Spanish a lot. And so I wanted to find a consistent variable in his life, something consistent in order for him to be able to differentiate or find the difference. And so with my own practice, I was like, you know what? That makes sense. Grandparents always love to speak their native language, even when they're speaking to you. So that is a good example of where I thought I was able to do something consistently, but then I couldn't. So then I found something else and I modified it. And that's what it is about raising a multicultural child, or like you said before, he's going to be multilingual. It was adapting to what was appropriate to him. I learned with him. I'm also learning Mandarin, which is kind of cute. So my mom and dad speak Spanish only to him. My in-laws speak Mandarin to him. And then my husband and I, we go back and forth, especially when we're having conversations.
I love that. Now, Did you and your spouse have a conversation before you had your son, like while you were pregnant, like deciding like who was going to speak to your son in what language, or did it just happen more organically?
Yes, we definitely had a conversation before. We were actually going to try this method, and it's actually where they say that you focus on the language a day. So basically, let's say you do Monday Spanish, Tuesday English, Wednesday Mandarin, and then you rotate. Like I said, I'm a provider myself, and I'm an active provider and an active researcher. So I focus on a lot of research, and I'm actually conducting research myself. So that was one of the methods that came across, and I thought that was very doable. I was like, yeah, I could definitely do that. Nope. so as you can see, things change. And I think that's about parenting and acceptance of adapting to things that don't go your way. And so that was our first method. We were like, yeah, we're going to do that. And then he was like, well, you don't speak Mandarin. So what are you going to do on Wednesday? I'm like, well, technically, I won't say anything. That's the whole point. He's like, really? And I was like, yeah. And then like the little things, like I'll try and then I'll learn too, because I'll hear what you guys are saying consistently. We will really emphasize that language that day. And so it didn't work.
Pardon, I have to ask, how long did you try it?
So we started like when he was 4 months old, when he was a little bit more alert. Only a month, I would say. Only a month.
That was a long time.
It was. I was so dedicated to definitely raising him in that field, definitely enhancing that culture. And it didn't work, and it's okay. So then I was like, okay, I got to figure it out. What else can I do? And then that's when I was like, wait, consistency. Consistency is always key, even with child development. For example, if you read, you read, you read to your son every day, that verbal stimulation will come eventually, or joint attention, or whatever it is that you're getting from a book. So I was like, what is so consistent in his life? And I kept looking. And at first I was like, setting, perfect setting. Grandmother's parents' house, he'll differentiate, right? Based on setting. Mm-hmm. But then you have families get together, everyone's speaking different languages, and you're like, holidays, for example, Christmas, we're all together. You hear Mandarin, you hear Spanish, you hear English. So we're like, that's not working. Then I noticed my mom always speaks Spanish, even to me. Mm-hmm. And then my mother-in-law only speaks Mandarin to my husband and my son-in-law. So I was like, and that's where I was like, okay, that's it. That's where it is. And it's working, I'll be honest. He knows the difference between Mimi, which that's my mom's grandma name, Mimi, and then Nai Nai, which is grandma in Mandarin. So when we go to my mother-in-law, he goes, Nai Nai, Nai Nai. And so I'm like, okay. And then he actually said the other day, milk, Lu Nai, which is very similar to grandma. Mm-hmm. So he's learning, as you can see. And I'm like, wow, okay, it's working.
Yes, I think it's important that first couple key things is that one, you were very good to have that conversation with your spouse early on, because in many cases, and including mine, we don't really have that conversation. We just kind of assume that, oh, we want to raise them bilingually or trilingually and we'll figure it out. But it's important to have that conversation and to be intentional from the beginning. I mean, I think that's one of the key steps, because when you are intentional from the beginning, you, as you stated, you can become flexible and you can adapt and kind of change as your child grows. But having that intention from the beginning that you are going to raise him bilingually or trilingually, regardless of the environments, the circumstances, what happens, that you will adapt, having that commitment and that consistency from the beginning really kind of sets the tone for their language development as they continue to grow. So definitely two key points to keep in mind. Are there any specific books or shows? I mean, he's still little, but is there anything that right now that are tools that you're using with your son in both Spanish and or Mandarin?
Yes, actually. I always say that my son is blessed because I am so into the field. And as you mentioned before, or what we mentioned eventually, is I have my own bilingual classes for children. And so we use Canticos. Love that. He's obsessed with them. Mm-hmm. I love that they involve both English and Spanish all in one song and all in one book. And he was able to grasp that. And it's funny because now he's like saying, oh, because they like to pronunciate the vowels. And so love that for the Spanish and English aspect. As for the Mandarin, there is one company that I currently use now. It's called Bidi Bao. So unfortunately, there isn't that many bilingual books, just like there is for English and Spanish, let alone for Mandarin English. It's very complicated. So I would definitely just say Bidi Bao, because because it's age appropriate, like you just mentioned. He's so little, even the picture book, there's so many limited resources. And then that's the sad part, that you really gotta like look and you gotta find that diamond in there and finally find it. But those are great companies that I love a lot.
I love that. Viana, any tips for parents raising bilingual children or that want to start, especially for parents with babies?
Yes, of course. One thing I always say in my own classes or with my own patients is consistency is key. I know that might sound so simple to do, but it's actually the most complex thing to do. It's all about if you work on that one skill at a long duration of time, and it could be 2 weeks, it could be 4 weeks. It depends on how long it takes child to grasp it. I think that's one of the big things. So if you really want to raise a child in both English and Spanish languages, you just be consistent. Just bring in that bilingual book, show that bilingual song, bring that cultural, enhance that cultural, show them different types of, whether you're Peruvian, Salvadorian, Dominican, definitely enhance it. Don't let it go, because then they'll grasp it and then they'll finally understand the difference.
I recommend, I don't know if you've read this book, Atomic Habits, for parents, because it goes into the science of creating habits. And if you think about it, consistency is all about habits and creating habits. And I think one of the biggest mistakes that people make, in not just parents, but just in general, is to create sort of unrealistic goals or goals that are just so high that they're difficult to commit to. So I tell parents, if you want to start reading to your child, start by one day a week reading one book, and perhaps it's reading for 15 minutes. And maybe you increase the next week to 2 days a week and for 15 minutes. And then maybe the following week, it's 3 books a week, right? You commit to those small changes, and you build upon that to create a long-lasting habit, because you have to celebrate your small wins. Like, we are creatures of instant gratification, right? But if you set the bar so high and you don't celebrate until months from now, right? You don't have that instant gratification. You're not going to have that motivation to keep going. So when you're working with children and when you're building upon those habits and you want to create that consistency, always start small. When you start small, you're going to have those small wins throughout, and you can build upon that. And that's going to help you stay consistent, really.
Yes, I totally agree. That was actually an amazing book. Loved it. It was one of my favorites. Yes, even when I have parents that are like, I try to have him label the 5 numbers. And I'm like, why don't we just start with 1? Just focus on 1 right now. No need to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like, that's too much. And that's what we do with practice too. It's like we start with a set of 3 or a set of 2. Then we increase little by little, depending on whether they mastered the skill or not. So definitely agree with you on that.
Absolutely. Viana, thank you so much for sharing your bilingual parenting journey. We are going to talk about your bilingual classes and your expertise in bilingual behavioral counseling. We are back. Viana, can you share a little bit about your background and expertise in bilingual behavioral counseling? And what does that mean? And what does that look like?
Yes, of course. So as a behavior consultant, I work on, it's called applied behavioral analysis. It's a type of treatment that we provide for children with autism or any child that has any behavioral concern, whether it's a behavior that's not appropriate, whether it's to society, the parents, school setting, any concern that brings up to us. So usually we get referrals through the pediatrician, the school district. And so right now, before I used to work for early intervention, which we focus on children from 0 to 3. And then after that is the school district. So now I'm actually emerging into the school district because there is a high need for a bilingual behavior consultant. So as a bilingual, I get to do it in English and Spanish. I get to do assessments in both languages, assess the behavior and see why are they doing that behavior and how can we help reduce the behavior or replace it with an appropriate behavior. So that's what my specialty focuses on. We usually do work with children with autism. Down syndrome is another one, but other than that, it's just anyone. Even they can get it through private insurance or even private agencies. It's something that I'm very, very infatuated with. And it's funny because did I ever see myself being a bilingual behavior consultant? No, I wanted to be a neuroscientist and I was getting my master's degree in neuroscience, Stony Brook. And then one day I just found a job that I just needed, early intervention. I was like, okay, let's do it. And then I fell in love. I fell in love with the field and I get to grow. And that's what bilingual behavior consultant is. We get to help children, whether it's helping them properly communicate something. And sometimes when children get frustrated, they use their behaviors. Like, for example, if a baby's crying because they don't have the words, then that frustration just stays there and it consistently increases if the words are not there. And so we help them with that. And I get to use that on my son. You don't have to be diagnosed. And that's something cool that I like. Use ABA on my son? Of course. There's so many positive things around it, and it's been increasing his way of communicating and things like that.
Do you see a difference between Latino parents and non-Latino parents in terms of how and when you address them about their children's concerns?
Yes and no. So before, there was like a big thing about if you introduce two languages, for example, to the child, they will get confused and they'll form a speech delay. And so I don't agree with that. I do think that children have the ability to differentiate, just like they have the ability to say, well, not say, I'm sorry, but more like point to what they want or cry if they don't want something. So they are understanding of what is a difference to begin with. So with our Latino parents, I feel like if anything, there's just more confusion going on, right? Because first they're like, wait, is there a speech delay because I'm introducing both languages? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, but wait, why is he showing self-injurious behavior? For example, hitting his head on the wall or throwing really bad tantrums. And like to us, for example, and it's just not just this, but that's one red flag for us in order to see if they're possibly in the spectrum when they can't transition or if they can't accept a no or they can't accept that something doesn't go its way. And so with our Latino parents, I definitely try to incorporate their culture and their expectations to understanding if their child's behavior is appropriate or not, and if it's something that we need to consult with a psychologist. So I think that's one of the biggest things. Yes, I think we do definitely need to, how do I say this, include cultural into it. Because, for example, eye contact, right? A lot of cultures, children are not supposed to make that eye contact with an elder. It's inappropriate. It's not respectful. But then in America, the United States, eye contact is actually one of the important things in order to have appropriate social communication conversation. And so if a child doesn't have eye contact, then what do they say? Oh, that's a red flag. We got to evaluate the whole child, see if something's going on. And so culture is very important. And I think with our Latino parents, I'm a little bit more, let's look at the bigger picture. Let's look at what you do at home, what languages you focus on, what languages are you, for example, applying the rules, what languages are being done with the providers. So it's more to the picture. Comparing to our non-Latino families, I know it's very straightforward. There's only English and there's only one structure, and it's a little bit more, I guess, easier to assess.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Let's talk about, from your behavioral perspective, why is language exposure and bilingualism considered important for a child's overall development?
When I was in Stony Brook, one of the biggest things that we talked about is how the use of language can actually enhance a greater percentage of brain usage. So I always encourage parents because of that. For example, if you have a child that's going back and forth between two languages, imagine when they can do when they're multitasking. So I think it's very important because you're enhancing, you're giving them the opportunity to be more multitaskers. I think it's actually a benefit. I think it's a great thing to do because not only are you stimulating that brain usage and you're stimulating all the other skills in different languages going back and forth, but then you're also, let's not forget about our culture, right? Let's not forget about our roots. And I think it's a beautiful thing that you can share your own roots with your child. My son, for example, he's not Peruvian. He wasn't raised in Peru. He hasn't had that Peruvian experience like I did. But I am excited to go to Peru one day and him to see Machu Picchu or Cusco. See, like, for example, we go milk a cow because my grandmother's a farmer in Peru to get our milk, not go to Whole Foods and get our milk. No, I think it's very important because it builds humbleism. And that's something that I've noticed, even as I was raised here it's hard to keep. You can be in such a momentum and develop so great as a person, and then you kind of lose your roots. So that's why I love this field, because it brought me back to it. And that's why now with my own son, it goes back to it too.
Do you think there's a concern with Latino parents when you assess them? Like, let's say that their child is being assessed for potential autism or some behavioral concern. Do you think there's a lot of pushback from parents in terms of language? Like, do they want to stop raising them bilingual, or is there a fear, or how does that play?
So, with my Latino parents, first, it's what is autism? What is ABA? I think that's the most common thing that I get when it comes to pushback, because once their child is diagnosed, then, for example, I've noticed where a school will request for psychological evaluation and they're like, okay, let's do it. But they're not understanding why they're doing it. And so because there's red flags of autism. And so once the child is diagnosed, then that's where I get like, why? How is that possible? Mm-hmm. And so with the bilingualism and me being able to speak Spanish, I get to explain to more further detail than a translator, which sometimes gets lost to translation certain details. And so that's the first pushback that I get. I even asked my mom, I was like, I don't understand. Like, no, and I always ask my parents, I'm like, what is autism not a big thing in Peru? Did you ever heard of it? Like, because growing up, I saw it in school. We had some classes that were in the spectrum or had, you know, disorders. And so I remember mom's like, no, honey, I never knew it until you brought it up to me. And so that's where it kind of sparked me like, okay, now I understand why. There's just no understanding of it because there's just no exposure to it back in the country. So that's the first thing. That's the first pushback.
Do you think it's like not that there's exposure to it, or not that there's acknowledgement of it? Because autism is not just for the United States. It's for children all over the world. But I think culturally, because it is not spoken about, or there isn't that acknowledgement, or perhaps could be shame involved as well, as in terms of your child being different. You don't want to put emphasis on the fact that your child is different.
Yes, I agree. Yes, I think there's a lot of concern of what society will say, friends, family members. I know definitely criticism is a big thing in general, right? And so I think with any parent, I see that. I see a lot of that. I think also with our Hispanic or Latino community, lack of support. I think that's one of the biggest things. And I do see that a lot when the child is diagnosed and then mom's understanding and then dad's like, I don't understand still. So you're still trying to educate them, and then sometimes builds conflict. And so that's one of the biggest things in understanding the overall picture. Once I become their provider, I try to become that support system, because I know they don't have it at home. And even alone here in the United States, there's not enough bilingual behavior consultants, bilingual behavior specialists, even bilingual resources. So it's kind of like they already know what's coming. It's like, how can I do my parent training if like Vian is only here for a certain amount of years, then who's next? So I definitely understand the fear of possibly getting lost, and then the fear of probably restarting or regressing, and then the criticism coming along with that.
I mean, I think that's why it's so important, especially as parents, to understand the powerful benefits of raising bilingual children, because it's not just about raising bilingual children. It's also about raising future educators, future medical specialists, future people in our community that are service providers that will provide these services for our Latino community, for those Spanish speakers, for people that keep coming. And whether you want to deny it or not, the reality is that in the United States, we have a huge Spanish speaking population that is being underserved by the lack of resources. So what I encourage parents is to think about your child's potential future and a way that they can contribute to society, not just by their education, but with their language, they can contribute to our community.
Yes, I also agree. And that's actually the second part of your question. Do I have parents that stop introducing Spanish because they fear that they might regress because of the behavioral concerns that now just upcame or just emerged? I always say no and yes, because, for example, I've had two scenarios where Spanish speaking is less structured at home because it's more emotional, more social. And then when they go to school, it's more structured and it's in English. So a child was able to differentiate that. So every time you spoke to them in Spanish, they would get silly. And that was actually very interesting. And I assessed this child about a year ago. And ironically, I was like, I noticed that. And only a bilingual provider can see that. And then I've had the other scenario where it didn't make a change at all, didn't make a difference. Mm. It was just consistent. The behavior was consistent in both languages. So I was like, okay. And interesting enough, that's actually a research that I'm focusing on right now. I'm conducting an open research where we're focusing on preference of language of children with autism, because one of the biggest things also is that what language can they receive these services, right? And at the end of the day, you determine that based on an assessment that's done. And so usually the first question in that assessment is to the parent, what language do you speak to them at home? Or what language do they speak more? And so the parent would say either English or Spanish. And so for the first time, I've decided, why don't we let the children decide? You'll be surprised. And so that's what my research is on, where the child gets to decide what language, and we do these certain amount of tests to determine if that language that they chose is appropriate to use in an assessment. So giving them the ability to choose the language to determine future services and things like that. So language has so many, there's so many aspects to it. And I think not many see that. And I think once we bring so much more awareness, crossing fingers, we have more people get on board with being a provider, being a speech pathologist, physical therapist, whatever provider there is, right, for children, being more trying to get involved in the field. And I think that's what we're also missing, lack of providers, especially multicultural providers.
I've spoken to bilingual and dual immersion providers, and that the majority of their students enrolled are non-Latino. So you're like, okay, we have to educate from within, from our own community, to educate and let them understand, help them understand that other non-Latino parents see the benefits, not just cognitive, but also socioeconomic benefits that language learning and foreign language learning has on their kids. Okay, let's apply that same thing to our children and our community, because that's how we can be at the same level. That's how you become business owners. That's how you understand how the system works. That's how you get grants. That's how you get funding. That's how you make a difference within your community. But it really starts, all that starts at a very low level conversation in education.
Yeah, I agree with you in that. Very, very important. With a little quick info about me, my parents never stopped speaking to me in Spanish. They made sure it was very important. And they didn't know how important it was until it was time to apply for colleges. My parents, yeah, they were very like, you got to play an instrument, you got to do a sport, and you got to be straight A student. And I did it. I even taught religion in my Catholic church, and there's a list. When it was time to apply for my applications for college, I had a mentor that told me, your statement, your purpose statement that you delivered to the university, make it about your multicultural, how you're Hispanic, Peruvian, you were born there, and all these other labels that I had. And I was like, okay. I was considered for Harvard. I was considered for Princeton. I got interviewed by Harvard and Princeton. And I got into Princeton. Unfortunately, I ended up not going for financial reasons that my parents couldn't support. And that's definitely a whole other topic we could definitely get into one day. But you see the doors that opened for me, because I said, I'm Hispanic. I'm smart. I do it all. And fast forward to now, I'm technically dual masters, going into that PhD, going to apply to Columbia University in hopes to get a full ride. And the doors knock for me because of the bilingualism. You have no idea. I don't have one offer. I have 10 offers on the door. And you see, and it's because of the bilingualism, there's such a high need. So I do agree. It is a great way, and it's definitely a way to definitely be better. And I grew up in poverty too. You know, when we first came into Peru, we had nothing here. And then for you to see what I have now is amazing. And then our parents are so joyful for that. Same thing with my sister, applying for law school, NYU, Columbia, here we go, we're gonna do it. And she's also just like myself. We're both multicultural. We both enhance that. We both definitely write it in our purpose statement and things like that.
Yes, yes, and yes. This This episode is brought to you by Confident Bilingual Parenting. Hola, hola, padres increíbles. Welcome to a journey of confident bilingual parenting where we transform doubts into triumphs and fears into confidence. I'm your guide, Jenny Perez, bilingual parenting educator, author, and your biggest cheerleader. Picture this. It's 2015 and I'm standing where you are today, eager to give my daughter the gift of bilingualism. But let me tell you, it wasn't a walk in the park. Living in an English-speaking neighborhood with a non-speaking Spanish husband, I faced unique challenges. Like you, I wanted my child to have a better future connected to her roots and hablando español. And that's when I realized most people fail at raising bilingual kids because they try to fit a mold that doesn't suit their family's dynamics. That's why I created the Confident Bilingual Parenting Course, a unique journey tailored for parents of 0 to 6 years old. We break it down, offering you a proven 4-step process to confidently raise a bilingual child in a way that aligns with your family and your child's individual needs. With this course, you'll unlock the secrets in modules like Bilingual Brilliance, where you ignite your passion for raising a bilingual child, and Unlocking Linguistic Potential, where you tap into your child's natural learning abilities. And you can do this all in the comfort of your home. But that's not all. Enroll today and you'll also get exclusive bonuses worth over $3,000 from a confidence course companion to a bilingual resources directory that will save you money. I've got you covered. And here's the cherry on top. Use code POD20, that's POD20, for an exclusive 20% off. Yes, you heard it right. 20% off your ticket to Confident Bilingual Parenting. Just enter POD20 at checkout. Visit milegacy.com and click on course. Start the year con fuerza and join the Confident Bilingual Parenting community and watch your child soar hablando español. Let's talk a little bit about Bebes of the Island. What is the name now, though, if you changed it?
No, it is. So it is Bebes of the Island. Yeah, it was Bebes de la Isla.
Okay.
So Bebes of the Island is basically a bilingual program we just started. So basically, like, mommy and me are paired in the classes, but both in English and Spanish. So we focus on 6 to 24 months old in one set of class, so my infant and toddlers, and then we do the 2 to 5, which is my toddlers and my preschoolers. The reason I created it is because as a mom myself, and, you know, I want to teach my son, I want to make sure he's getting that education somewhere, somehow, even as a baby. I would go to the mommy and me classes. And then one day I was like, wait a minute, I should take him to Spanish ones. And there was just none in Long Island. None. There was one that was like, we can only have your son start until he's 1. And I was like, but he goes to a mommy and me class now at 6 months. So I wish there was something now. And that's where I created it, because I wanted to give the opportunity to the people that do want to bring that exposure at a young age to have that class. And so we are the first one in Long Island where we incorporate both English and Spanish, and we're doing it at a young age. So right now we're in Nassau County. We're doing amazing there. We're in sometimes at the library. Sometimes we're hosting our private events. And now we're slowly emerging into Suffolk County, which is the other side of Long Island.
I love that. Now, do you focus on all types of children, or do you focus on children perhaps that have behavioral needs?
I would say both, because with my own profession, if I ever do have any parent that, for example, I've had a lot of parents message where they'll be like, hey, you know, my child's autistic. Is this okay if I bring them? Because sometimes children with autism do have certain behaviors that can be concerning to other people, whether they're hurting themselves or tantruming or crying for like 30 minutes. And I'm like, of course. Because, like, that's the beautiful thing about my class. I have profession. So I know what I can do to calm them down, calming strategies. I know how to help them incorporate. I know they need some motivation. We call it MO. So I always encourage anyone to participate in my class, whether they're neurotypical or they have a diagnosis, because I'm there for them. I'm there to help them and support them. And we do get that. We do get a wide variety of everything. Right now, we're only, like you mentioned, 0 to 5, technically. Hoping one day to go into the older population, not yet, because we literally just started in November of last year.
Let's talk a little bit about what parents can expect when they take a class. And do they have to take, like, is it a program? Can they just walk in and take a class? How does it work?
So, for example, I always wanted to provide them in two types of ways, private and public, I call them. Public is where we're at the library, you know, free of charge. You get a little bit of a snippet of what we do. We do have age-appropriate activities, whether it's like circle time, story time, sing-along, parachute play. And so the only difference is, like, in our public, which is the library event, we just do like 3 to 4 activities, and that's it. It's like very quick intro and everything. Our private is a little bit more involved. We do 5 to 7 activities, depending on how much the children are grasping and also how long they're attending to the whole class. Our private parents, they do have to sign up, whether it's through our social media. And then my private classes, I give them bilingual resources. So every child in my class and my private classes gets to take a book home, and it's a bilingual book. So I've had a lot of already consistent participants where, for example, there's this one little girl I love. She has been to my class since day one, and she probably must have like already up to 8 books, but you see, they get that. Right now, we are going to be working with a couple of other companies so that we can hopefully use their, for example, if they have bilingual flashcards, things like that, we will definitely include that in there into their little to-go-home bilingual resource little bag. So that's what we're doing right now, where public, you get the class of socialization, interacting like a mommy and me class. And then my private is you get that for more, and you get to take home something.
That sounds wonderful. And where can parents sign up for these classes?
Right now, whether it's through Facebook or Instagram, we have our own little link tree. It's actually posted in our social media. So once they click into that, they'll see all of our classes that we're presenting. So like, for example, Easter is coming. So we're going to do a couple of Easter private classes. But overall, if they ever have questions for us, social media right now is the main way to connect with us. Through Bibbids of the Island. That's how it's called on Facebook and on Instagram. I always have parents that still not technical there. So they're like, can you just help me? Here you go. I'm like, of course, you know, I'm always there to help.
There you have it. Now, one last question. Where can parents find resources if they're concerned perhaps that their child is having behavioral needs, or perhaps they want to consult or they have questions?
I always say first through me. Since I work with a couple of agencies, one for early intervention through the school district, or even if they have a bilingual provider, your bilingual provider is always the main source. Other than that, I would say, unfortunately, there's not a lot of bilingual resources for autism or Down syndrome, or even like applied behavioral analysis. So I always say also, surprisingly enough, even when I had to find it for myself, to find it for parents. I've noticed through social media, other providers where they post about it, whether it's informing what is ABA or how to furtherly explain what that is. And that's also something that I've decided to do on my end, where it's like I focus on a topic each week and we go into depth of what it is. And it's like something quick and easy, 5 minutes. You see a cute little post on social media and you're also learning as we're also growing.
I love that. Bianna, thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your tips. Hopefully, some of our parents out in Long Island can take some of your Mommy and Me classes. We're doing a fast round of questions coming up. We are back, and it is a show tradition that we ask our guests the same round of questions. Bianna, this is your fast round of questions. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, what is your biggest struggle as a mom?
Definitely adapting to his busy schedule that he has. One day he's Legos, one day he's dinosaurs, one day he's trucks, one day he doesn't want the trucks. So definitely adapting to his life.
Yes, I love that. But they're so fun at that age. Just wait till he starts talking and then it's like, oh, it's so much fun. What is the best piece of advice that you've received from a mom or your mom?
Don't forget to take time for yourself and your husband. I think one of the biggest things I do agree is that we focus so much on being mommy. We forget about being wifey. And so now we dedicate, my husband and I, we've decided to dedicate a weekend to ourselves once a month and then date night twice a month. That's one big thing because you've started together. You want to end together too.
Absolutely. And I will say, my daughter is turning 9 very soon. And you think that when they're little that, oh, you don't have time because they're little. Let me tell you, as they continue to grow, you have probably less time when they're older just because of all the extra activities and projects and stuff. So you definitely have to make your spouse or your partner a priority, and you have to be intentional and set that time aside for sure. Finish the sentence. Growing up Latina, I
am very grateful to be, because it has brought me so many opportunities that even I didn't know could bring. So I think that's very important. Never forget about your roots.
What piece of financial advice has served you as a Latina?
I would say So for example, one thing that I always knew and everyone knows is being a hard worker. Hispanics are very hard workers, very, very hard workers. And at one point I was that too. But then I had to work smarter. So I think it's not just about working hard to a certain percentage, but then eventually your body gets tired, your mind gets tired. So then now you got to switch it up, work smarter. So definitely work hard to get to the point where you can work smarter. And a lot of people in society or your employees or your boss could eventually allow it and understand it.
That's a great piece of advice. What Latino dish would you like to pass down to your kids and why?
Oh, so there's this traditional dish that my mom makes once a year called sopa seca. It's very native Peruvian. Not many people know about it. Definitely would want to learn how to cook it myself and then bring it down to my son. He loves sopa seca. My mom only makes it for Christmas. So definitely want him to, it's not just about being Peruvian, but the Inca in it, right? The people that.
What is it? So what is in sopa seca? Like,
this is my favorite part of this show when we talk about food.
So it's like, there's two dishes to it. One side of it's like noodles. It looks like, I would say it looks like tallarin verde. It looks very greenish, but it's very dark. My mom says she used a lot of cilantro and a lot of spices, especially huacatay, which is a specific herb in Peru. And then the other side of it, it's chicken with potatoes and it's kind of like orangey red. Mm-hmm. So the reason that they call it sopa seca is because you basically cook the noodles and that potato thing into the broth, the chicken broth, and it dries up. So it's called sopa seca. It's very, very herby and I love it. So that's definitely one thing I would want to keep because my mom learned it from my grandmother and my grandmother learned it from my great grandmother. So not many people know what it is, especially if you, like, for example, if you were raised here, ceviche, you know, lomo saltado, you know, all of that, but you don't know what sopa seca is.
Is that something that you can find in a restaurant, a Peruvian restaurant or no?
No one makes it. Oh. You got to be really good to make it. Yeah. So it's funny because my uncle just is visiting from Peru and my mother was like, so how's my sopa seca? He's like, it's okay. Grandmother makes it better in, you know, in Edis in the mountains. And so there you go. See, it's something unique. And I would definitely want my son to definitely have that. And if you were to ask for Mandarin, like Chinese, I would say one thing that's very cool that I've learned through my husband's culture is hot pot. It's that big pot where you put a bunch of things and it has that really spicy broth. I feel like that's one of the coolest things where you're really, really kind of sharing. And he sees that with Peruvians. And it's funny because with my husband, when we go to restaurants with him, everyone orders their own plate. Chinese don't. They order big plates and you're all sharing. So definitely want my son to keep that tradition, the hot pot tradition.
Okay. Yeah. What Hispanic home remedy do you swear by?
Oh my God. It's chamomile tea, anise, té de anise. So the reason I say this is because baby had really bad colic when he was really baby, like 2 weeks old. And my mom's like, dale té de anise. And I was like, I'm not going to give him tea. Fast forward to 2 weeks later, we were trying to do, you know, natural remedies like touching the stomach, things like that, elevating, etc. It's funny because one of the remedies that the doctor recommends is the chamomile drop that's for gas, the gas drop. So I was like, oh, it's literally té de anís. And then my mom's like, yeah. And
so I told you.
So I'm like, oh, so now every single time my son gets a little bloated, his little sippy cup, té de anís. And it's funny because it's such also Chinese thing because they all drink tea. So we joke, he's so Chinese.
Yana, what do you want your legacy to be?
I want to be known for the person that enhanced and changed things in our applied behavioral analysis field by enhancing multicultural awareness and also enhancing bilingualism. I think in my field, there's not enough. There's definitely an eye opener about it. Like, yeah, there's, you know, we definitely understand that there is a need to be multicultural aware and sensitive, multicultural sensitivity, we call it. But there's just not someone that's taking the lead. I want to be the leader for that because my end goal, a lot of people ask me like, when will you be satisfied? Because I've never stopped going cool. I've never stopped working. I'm the type of person that just needs to be on the go. And I told them, I think I will be happy when our own code of ethics get modified to more multicultural sensitive patients. That's when I know I did my job and I am done. And I'm working hard for that, which is why I'm getting that PhD, going to start networking in our field a little bit more. Definitely creating Bebés of the Island was another way to do it. And then also continuing research, definitely focus on a lot of bilingual research for patients and publishing them. And that's one of the next steps I'm going to do, publishing in our journal of applied behavioral analysis.
One person at a time, we can change the world. Bianna, thank you so much for being on today's show. Once again, where can my listeners connect with you?
Yes, through our social media, Bebés of the Island. That's where you'll find me. I've been more consistent. I keep saying we, but I'm the one behind it all. I'm the instructor. I'm the founder. I'm the social media marketing. Yeah, through our social media or even Facebook. I have a lot of parents who eventually find me and they, you know, message me privately about their concerns. And I am a person to help. I love helping. So definitely you guys reach me through there.
Yes. And we'll have all of Bianna's information in our show notes. So be sure to check that out. Bianna, thank you so much.
Yes. No, thank you.
Thank you, Bianna, for sharing your insights and support in navigating the world of special needs children, especially within our Latino community. Remember, bilingual children today become the bilingual leaders and support for our Latinx community in the future. With the U.S. population projected to be 1 in 4 Latinos by 2060, we as a Latinx community will want those leaders to reflect us and our experiences so that they can possess the cultural empathy and knowledge that many currently lack today. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Latina Mom Legacy Podcast. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with a mama amiga. For show notes, visit thelatinamomlegacy.com and click on today's episode or scroll down on your podcast platform. If you're a Spotify subscriber, be sure to leave your comments. Un beso, un abrazo y hasta la próxima. Ciao, ciao.